WCAP, 12 minutes after 4 o'clock, living for the weekend. On this big, fun Friday, I'm Gary Francis. Jerry Lauderdale's along with us. MJ Rodriguez over on the other side of the glass. And joining us is Bruce Blaine, K1BG. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
I'm fine, Gary. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in. This is a big weekend for those of us who are hams. Now, where did the term ham come from? Do we even know?
Nobody's really sure. There's a number of different theories. One is that it's a Cockney accent abbreviation for the word amateur, so they started calling hams hamateurs. Another is that back in the old days, before Titanic, everyone was sharing the frequency spectrum together, commercial, military,
right,
amateur.
Right.
And they accused hams of being poor operators and said that they were ham-fisted. And hams, being what we are, took that more as a compliment than anything else, and they adopted the term. So there's a number of different theories, but no one's really sure.
Have you ever met Donna Helper?
I believe I know of her,
okay,
but I don't think we've
She's
met.
Written the history of broadcasting and amateurs here in New England. We've had her at the Billerica Amateur Radio Society meetings before, doing her speeches, and she has quite the stories about how commercial radio, as we know it today, started out as hams in their living rooms doing it back in the early 1900s.
Correct. That's my understanding as well.
So now you are a K1BG. That would make you an extra class, right?
Correct.
As I am also an extra class. I'm W1GFF. But this is a big weekend for all of us. Can you tell us about why it's such a big weekend?
So this is the fourth full weekend in June, where we amateurs in North America have an activity called Field Day. Basically, Field Day is a test of emergency preparedness. So amateurs set up their stations and equipment in locations where they don't normally operate, set up using some type of emergency power, either generators or batteries or solar-powered equipment. Mm-hmm. And they get on the air and they use their equipment and have a weekend full of fun and enjoyment in the outdoors doing this kind of thing.
Now, a lot of people today might think ham radio is a very old-fashioned thing. But when you think about it, we have the show there that, what's his name, did? I can't think of his name now. Tom Dick, whose real name is... I can't think of it now. The TV show where he ran the... like a Bass Pro Shop type of thing, but it was a different name, and because he had a big ham set up in his office in the store.
Yeah, the name of it.
Last Man Standing.
Last Man Standing. That's it. Yes, exactly.
Marblehead.
That's it. Yes.
Tim Allen.
Tim Allen, but Tim is actually a ham himself. Mm-hmm. He's a technician class. What are the three?
What are those classes?
Yeah, what are
for those of us who don't know what you're talking about?
So the entry-level license is the technician class license, and that gives you a limited amount of privileges, mm-hmm. but it's a fairly easy license to get.
Right.
The next level up is a general class license, more privileges, a little bit harder.
When you're speaking of privileges, what does that mean?
That means you have more frequencies that you can operate on, more power that you can use.
It goes farther?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You can use... As a technician, you're pretty much VHF, UHF, local repeaters, things like that.
Right.
You can get into HF, high frequency, once you become a general. You have the upper end of the frequencies that you can use.
Okay.
The HF, like 20 meters, 40 meters, 80 meters, 160 meters.
It all means
meters.
Something to you, but to a layman like me, that means it just goes farther?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's more spectrum, more frequency. So if we're talking broadcast, you have the AM broadcast band, the FM broadcast band. Well, on the amateur radio bands, you have 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, 15 meters. You have a whole bunch of different places where you can operate.
And so you guys have the same classification?
We're both extras.
And that means
that's the highest you can go. That's the hardest test to take. You have to take it step by step by step. Now, I'm one of the coordinators here in the Billerica Lowell area that actually administers the tests every month. Second Thursday of the month, we have the test session at the Chelmsford Bible Church down in the basement, right across from the Chelmsford Creamery, conveniently located, by the way, at 131 Gorham Street in Chelmsford. Open tonight till 10
p.m. Shameless plugging.
I'm sorry.
So the idea is that you guys are tested out because you don't want to, what, interfere with other people's broadcast? I mean, you need to know the rules of the road? Is that what it's about?
Not just the rules of the road, but okay. You have to know a lot about electronic theory.
Okay.
It goes into some pretty deep stuff. Moon bounce. There are people who actually will bounce their signals off the moon.
Cool.
And then have them come back to Earth.
I love that.
Anyone who's interested in communicating without using wires or infrastructure.
Okay.
Basically, you can set up your own small transmitting station and talk to people around the world. And it can be anything from people just having casual conversations to radio sport, which is contests that take place on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
to communicating through satellites, communicating off the moon, which Gary mentioned.
Meteors, even. Meteor skip.
Meteor scatter. There's all kinds of things you can experiment
That's
with.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't know enough about it. But I had a neighbor growing up that was a ham, and he had a big old antenna in the backyard.
Sure.
Is that relative to how much?
He only had one?
Well, I remember. There was a house behind his house, a little shack with a giant. Maybe there was multiple antennas.
Probably.
Yeah, but it was pretty tall.
I have
stood
seven
up above the trees.
Yeah, so, I've got seven altogether on my property.
All right.
I tell people this is a hobby. When it comes to spending money, it's like sailing. You can have a 6-foot sailfish and enjoy.
Bring on another 1,000. That's what boat stands for.
Or you can build a boat for the America's Cup.
Exactly.
Substantial investment that you use for a weekend, and you're finished.
How tall is the stick that you broadcast off of? Are they tall?
Mine goes, my vertical is up about 50 feet.
Yep.
But then again, I do have long wires, which are just bare wires up in the trees from one tree to the other, and that's up almost 80 feet. And then my tower is 80 feet with another 30-foot antenna on top of that.
Wow. Do you have to get zoned for all of that stuff?
Yeah.
Theoretically?
Yeah, no. Theoretically, okay. Yes. There
Depends
you go.
On where you live.
Right, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you have what's called a fall zone. So if your tower falls, it falls all on your property.
On your head, not someone else's.
And not on your neighbor's property, not on a street or something like that. And certainly not on power lines.
Right, okay. Yeah. Could go on. I'm just trying to be the guy that doesn't know anything, learning a little bit about it.
The hardest test to take is the extra, because that's 50 questions. And the others, the technician and the general, are 35 questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting harder all the time. They really are. But there are more licensed hams. I've heard this. Is it true there are more licensed hams in America now than ever before?
So if you look at the statistics, you're absolutely correct. There are more amateurs now than there have ever been before. And I know when I got my license in the late 60s, there were about 200,000 hams. I think there's about 850,000 hams now.
Now, you had to go to the customs house in Boston, right?
I had to sit in front of an old, grumpy FCC examiner. And
they don't do that anymore.
They don't, no.
No, you have what are called volunteer examiners, and we put our own sessions together. The American Radio Relay League supplies us with the tests, and we file them through them, and that's how a person gets their license.
And ultimately, in the case of a huge emergency, a maximum emergency where power went down and utilities were gone and everything like that, if you guys had battery backup, that'd be the way, literally, the world could stay in touch with each other, right?
Exactly.
It's a bottom line safety thing, isn't it?
Well, one of the reasons amateur radio exists is because we're supposed to provide emergency communications during emergencies. And I know during, even recently, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina.
Sure.
The Puerto Rico hurricanes.
Because the big radio stations, their tower blew down.
Right, exactly.
They're not broadcasting anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And amateurs are very resilient. As long as we can figure out how to power the equipment and have a piece of wire, throw a piece of wire up, and you're on the air.
And one guy can talk to the next guy, and he can relay the messaging.
That's called sending traffic.
Oh, interesting. Because it's a vital thing, I'm sure, especially rural areas, I would bet.
A lot of hams packed up and went down to Puerto Rico and spent weeks down there providing emergency communications when they had the hurricanes down there.
Wow.
That wiped out their infrastructure.
Yeah, so because even the utility trucks have to broadcast to each other on radio, and it's all mountainous country, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Interesting.
Exactly. So what can a person that goes to a field day celebration expect to see this weekend, and where are the local ones around here?
Well, as far as expectations, people will set up their antennas and their equipment. And mm-hmm. sometimes that can be as little as a single transmitter with a very simple piece of wire. You can have more extravagant field days where people go to great lengths to set up big stations, towers in some cases, multiple stations. They all will have generators or some method of powering the stations. And so there's a variety of different stations you'll
see. Doesn't one of the local clubs actually have a portable tower mounted on a trailer?
So actually, the Neshoba Valley Amateur Radio Club, which I'm a member of, actually has a tower on a trailer. It's interesting. We're not planning on using that this
really?
Year. We're just going to use push-up masts and very simple wire antennas.
And where are you guys having your field day?
So we'll be in Pepperell at the Heald Street Orchard, which is a public orchard in town. There's lots of foot traffic, walking paths, that kind of thing. So the public gets very interested in what we're doing, and we always have a lot of people who stop by and say hello.
Now in Billerica, and I'm the president this year of the Billerica Amateur Radio Society, we're having our field day at the Emergency Operations Center in Billerica, right near the Shawshene Valley Tech.
Sure.
So the public's invited to come down, see what we're doing.
Down near Wilmington.
It's not all radio either. There's such a thing as what's called slow scan amateur television and also fast scan color television, where you can actually broadcast TV-wise. Now, they don't really sell transmitters for that. That's kind of all homebrew stuff.
Really?
And that's kind of unique. I'm not that experienced to put that together. I have done the slow scan before. That's pretty easy. But the fast scan, I would be lost getting that set up.
Well, there's digital television now, and people are doing
that
too, right?
Yep.
So,
and there's also Morse code. People think Morse code is useless nowadays. More and more people. We don't test on Morse code anymore, which we used to do. To get your novice license years ago, you had to do, what was it,
five words a minute.
I waited until the Morse code requirement was gone, and a week later I got my technician license.
Morse code is still one of the most ingenious, efficient forms of communications ever invented by humankind.
Yep.
And if you don't have a computer, it is amazingly efficient. Now, there are new communications techniques that use computer technology to send data back and forth between computers. That's great if you've got working computers. If you don't, Morse code is still very handy.
Right.
Is Morse code the English alphabet only? I mean, it's dots and dashes right for letters, right?
Correct.
So,
but it's not. So
is it the,
again, if you're speaking French or German, any of the European languages, the alphabet is essentially the same.
Right.
But there is versions of Morse code for Japanese and, you know, Chinese and foreign languages that don't use Roman characters. So.
Interesting.
Although English seems to be the predominant language used in the ham radio world.
It is.
Airlines use it. Pilots use it.
Yeah.
You don't have guys flying in different languages. That's a little dangerous.
I mean, I've talked to guys in Poland, in Czechoslovakia, in Italy, in
Spain.
Well,
the Europeans all know English.
And they all use English, yeah.
Uh-huh. And even in Chinese and the Asian languages, they've taken their language in pinyin, like in Japanese. They use American letters for the sound. That's cool. Morse code. Dots and dashes.
Yep. And then there's some other digital modes. There's PSK31.
What's that?
Again, it's a digital mode. You have your computers are talking back and forth. You see text on the screen. There are some new ones. FT8 developed by Joe Taylor, who's a
local
Nobel Prize winning physicist. He does this in his spare time, and he's come up with these techniques, these digital techniques for communicating between stations.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff.
And there's even ways to send faxes by amateur radio.
Huh.
Which can come in very handy. Let's say you're out at an emergency and the doctor or the hospital needs some information. They can always fax back and forth if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's almost unlimited. And it's all whatever the person can come up with and then make the technology work for it.
Huh.
So now people are invited to just about every field day going on this weekend.
So it's most field days are open to the public.
Yep.
If you go to the American Radio Relay League website, the ARRL is the national organization. Mm-hmm. So if you go to www.arrl.org, They have a page that's called the Field Day Locator,
mm-hmm.
and it's an interactive mapping system. You go there and you basically point to the geographical part of the country you're interested in, and it will show you on a map where all the different field days are.
Yep.
You can pick one of the pins on the map and get an exact address for the field day operation.
And certainly if you're a public official and either here in Lowell or in one of the local communities and you show up at a field day, that actually benefits the local club that's having the field day because it's extra points, because there's a way to earn points. If you're portable, if you're on battery power, if you're doing so many bands at a time, if a public official shows up, all those kind of things will give you extra points. So it's a big weekend for hams. I mean, and of course the food is always great at field day. I mean, you've always got one or two people who are going to be manning the barbecue grill, doing all the cooking for everybody. So it's a fun time.
So how many people will be at your event?
Probably 18, 20 people, something like that. Depends on the year. It depends on how many people stop by. We've had people got interested in amateur radio by walking past our field day operation and said, I'm interested in this. You know, how do I learn more? And they get their licenses, and they're very much into it now. So, Gary, I saw a press release earlier today. The astronauts on board the International Space Station will be participating in field day on their spare time. So everybody's really excited about this.
That sounds good. That is a common thing, by the way. The astronauts on the ISS will often speak to kids from school. Somebody will go in, they'll set up a ham station in the classroom, and the astronauts will talk to them from space.
But they have to be licensed radio amateurs. So they get their amateur licenses before heading up to space, and it's something they do in their spare time.
But the kids don't have to be licensed. As long as there's a control operator who is in control of the mic switch, that covers anybody who wants to talk.
So even a conversation 22 miles up in space is what, FCC control?
Yes, yes.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
So, once again, the website for those who want to find more about ham radio?
www.arrl.org, short for the American Radio Relay League.
And it's a great organization because you can find out how to get your license. You can find out how to study for your license.
You can find local clubs.
Local clubs, exactly. You can see who the local volunteer examiners are and how many test sessions they've done. I think I've done 206 so far over the years. Because I've been a ham now for about 13 or 14 years.
Very good.
So, but it's definitely, people think it's old-fashioned. It's not old-fashioned.
It's growing.
It's definitely growing.
It's old-fashioned like your telephone is old-fashioned.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got the latest state-of-the-art iPhone.
Right.
It's the latest cutting-edge technology, and amateur radio is very much the same thing.
Well, what's the future of with Starlink? You know, Elon Musk is going to put up thousands and thousands of satellites, hoping they don't run into each other and create space junk. But that's apparently trying to give internet to people that can't get it any other way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh, interesting. So you can't do internet stuff on ham.
Well, you can't.
Or could you?
On my phone, I can use a program, an app called Echolink.
Okay.
And I can get into hundreds of repeaters all over the country. I had to sign up for it, and they had to verify that I was who I said I was. But I can use this as a walkie-talkie and talk on any repeater I want.
It's just the government wants to know who's doing it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amateurs are taking commercial Wi-Fi equipment, modifying it for their own purposes, putting it on their own frequencies, on amateur spectrum that's allocated by the FCC, and doing things that the commercial equipment manufacturers are not doing. So there's a lot of experimentation going on, and a lot of interesting things happening.
A lot of smart guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Or gals. People, I should say.
Plus, then there's me. I'm basically what's called an appliance operator.
There you go.
I know how to work the radio, and that's about it.
They say if you're looking for tubes, just go to the old Iron Curtain countries like Poland and places like that.
Oh.
You can get all of the old glass tubes that nobody makes anymore.
Well, you know where the biggest tube repository in this country was.
Oh.
It was 243 Central Street. Oh. We had every tube you could imagine.
Some of them are worth money, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. If they work,
sure.
Most definitely. But we had literally thousands of tubes over at the old location.
A lot of the audiophiles like all that old tube
stuff.
Oh, yeah, stuff.
They do. We gave so much of it away, uh-huh. and there was still more left. And that's all down in the basement here now, but we won't go into that.
There you go.
All right. Bruce, thank you very much for joining us today.
Bruce, that was great. Fascinating.
I hope you have lots of people stop by. Now, tell us again where you guys are going to be tomorrow.
So we're going to be in Pepperell at the Heald Street Orchard. Heald Street Orchard.
Easy to find?
Very easy to find, and I think the people in Pepperell know exactly where it is, and it's, yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
We'll finish the conversation by I'll wish you 73.
73.
We'll be right back with the Spiritual Hour here at 980 WCAP.